Where do we find Christmas? This is a question that we've been asking over the last several weeks throughout the season of Advent. What are the moments when Christ enters in? When our eyes are suddenly opened and we are able to see Christ's presence more vividly in our lives, not just here in church, but out in the world in our daily walks. So over the last several weeks, we've been looking at some of our favorite Christmas movies, seeking out themes of the real Christmas story, themes of faith in the midst of doubt and light in the midst of our darkness, peace in the chaos and struggles of our world, and generous giving to those that most need to experience Christ's presence. This week, we're looking at the movie It's a Wonderful Life and the presence of angels in our midst. Our passage this morning comes from the letter to the Hebrews, and it affirms that, in fact, angels are in our midst. There will be times when God will send messengers to be present for us, angels for God's purpose. And so I'm going to be reading from Hebrews chapter 13, verses 1 through 3. Hear now God's word. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing this, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them, those who are being tortured as though you yourself were being tortured. God's good news for us this morning.
Thanks be to God.
It's a Wonderful Life. It was released in 1946 to mixed reviews from the public. Initially, it didn't do as well as they hoped, and it didn't even make the box office didn't even cover the cost of the film. And so for many years after its release, it just simply languished in the film vaults. Nobody was watching this movie. Nobody cared about this movie. And then in the late 60s and 70s, a television broadcast companies were able to obtain the rights for almost nothing, and they began to play it over and over again. In the 1970s, that's when I was growing up, networks would play it on a continual loop right before Christmas, and sometimes it was played as many as 20 times or more throughout the month of December. And after a while of this, people began to say, oh, well, yes, this must be a Christmas classic. I think because it just was played that many times. Now, if you've been to my house, if you haven't been to my house today, there is an open house from 4 to 7 p.m. But if you've been to my house, you know that we have a large painting that I obtained from my mother, which has a Bedford Falls in the winter. So watching It's a Wonderful Life was a family tradition in my house when I was growing up, and I'm sure that I'm not alone. But as a pastor, when I look at this movie, I see over and over again these biblical themes of loving neighbor, caring for those in need, and working together as a community when there is a need. And so I couldn't do a sermon series without doing It's a Wonderful Life. So let me tell you a little bit about the storyline. How many of you have never seen It's a Wonderful Life? Okay, there you go. That's good. That's good. Well, the story begins and with these prayers that are floating up to heaven. And the prayers are for George Bailey, that's played by Jimmy Stewart. And he is in need. It's Christmas Eve, and George Bailey is in desperate need. And so there's people that are praying for him all over. And you literally see these prayers ascending up into the cosmos. These prayers, they set into motion the story, and they introduce our angel, Clarence Oddbody, AS2, Angel Second Class. And he is given the charge to review the whole life story of George Bailey so he is able to save George and ultimately earn his wings. But we just learned that there's no wings. Well, we'll get back to that later. And so we flash back to the Great Depression. And we see George as a young, confident boy. We see him saving his brother. His brother is about to drown. He saves his brother. We see his compassionate heart. His boss had lost his child, and he had drank a little too much. He was a pharmacist, and he was about to poison because he wasn't paying attention. His son had just died, and George saves him from poisoning this young child. And we see a glimpse of his love life with Mary as a young girl, and she promises that she's going to love him forever. It's this sweet, idyllic picture of a small town community. But George is a dreamer, and George does not want to stay there. His father owns something called the Bailey Building and Loan. But George wants more. He wants out. He wants to shake the dust of this tiny little town and see the world. He wants to build things. He wants to make a difference in the world. But George never leaves Bedford Falls. In fact, after his father passes away, he takes ownership of the building and loan. And if you remember, or if you've never seen it, but he takes over the building and loan to save it from the evil Henry Potter. Not Harry Potter, Henry Potter. Henry Potter owns the bank, and he is the meanest, greediest man in Bedford Falls. Perhaps you might call Potter a Grinch. So George knows that without the Bailey Building and Loan, many of the townspeople wouldn't have a shot at owning their own place or even surviving, and so he stays. And in our first clip this morning, it is right at the beginning of the Great Depression when there's a run on the banks, and George and Mary have just gotten married. They're about to go off on their honeymoon. They've got $2,000, and they're about to head off, and George can finally get out and see the world, and they realize that there is a run on the bank, and George attempts to do everything he can do to keep the doors of the Bailey Building and Loan open.
Randall, wait, Randall, wait. Now listen to me. I beg of you not to do this thing. If Potter gets a hold of this building and loan, there'll never be another decent house built in this town. He's already got charge of the bank, he's got the bus line, he's got the department stores, and now he's after us. Why? Well, it's very simple. Because we're cutting in on his business, that's why. And because he wants to keep you living in his slums and paying the kind of rent he decides. Joe, you had one of those Potter houses, didn't you? Well, have you forgotten? Have you forgotten what he charged you for that broken-down shack? Here, Ed, you know, you remember last year when things weren't going so well and you couldn't make your payments? Well, you didn't lose your house, did you? You think Potter would have let you keep it? Can't you understand what's happening here? Don't you see what's happening? Potter isn't selling, Potter's buying. And why? Because we're panicky and he's not, that's why. He's picking up some bargain. Now, we can get through this thing, all right. We've got to stick together, though. We've got to have faith in each other.
But my husband hasn't worked in over a year, and I need money.
How am I going to live until the bank opens?
I got doctor bills to pay. I need cash.
I can't keep my kids on faith. I've got to have...
How much do you need?
Hey! I got $2,000. Here's $2,000. This will tide us over to the bank reopens. All right, Tom, how much do you need?
$242.
No, Tom, just enough to tide you over into the bank
reopens. I'll take $242.
$242. There you are.
That'll close my account.
Your account's still here. That's a loan. Okay. All right, Ed.
Well, I've got $300 here, George.
All right, now, Ed, what'll it take until the bank opens? What do you need?
Well, I suppose... $20?
$20. Now you're talking. Thanks, Ed. That's fine. All right. Now, Miss Thompson, how much do you want?
But it's your own money, George.
Now, don't mind about that. How much do you want?
I can get along with $20, all right.
$20, fine.
And I'll sign the paper.
You don't have to sign anything. I know. You pay when you can. That's okay. All right, Miss Davis?
Could I have $17.50?
Bless your heart. Of course you can have it. You got 50 cents?
So you get the sense of the kind of guy that George was. He uses his own money to keep the building and loan open. And this is the way that he lives his life. Now, the first half of the film is spent telling George's story, and by the time you reach the climax of the film, 8 years have gone by, and now it's 1946. World War II has just ended, and it's Christmas Eve, and George Bailey is still running the building and loan. He's barely making enough money to scrape by because George is more focused on helping others than profit margins. And on Christmas Eve, his Uncle Billy takes a deposit of $8,000 to the bank, which for today, I just want you to understand, $8,000 doesn't sound like too much, but in today's day and age, that would be $110,000. So he takes this deposit of $8,000 and he loses it. He misplaces it. Actually falls into the hands of Potter. Now, Potter, yes. Now, imagine this, $110,000 lost. Now, it would be bad enough if it were your own money, but imagine if the money didn't belong to you. You could be faced with all kinds of criminal charges, charges of embezzlement and fraud, and perhaps even a jail sentence. And since George is George, he isn't going to blame this on his Uncle Billy. He's going to take the responsibility for what happened. And so George does whatever he can that Christmas Eve to find the money, to find someone who could loan him the money and keep Uncle Billy and him out of jail. But by nightfall, he realizes that he is running out of time. And at this point, George feels like the whole world has come crashing down on him. And there's this powerful sense that there's this powerful scene where we see George at the bar and he's praying. He bows his head slightly and he says to God, God, oh God, dear Father in heaven, I'm not a praying man, but if you are up there and you can hear me, show me the way. Show me the way. I'm at the end of my rope. Show me the way. A simple prayer from the heart. But when George is not given the immediate answer, he decides that his family and his business and his community would be better off without him. And George drives to the closest bridge with plans to end it all, to jump. What he doesn't realize is that his prayers have been already answered in the form of an angel, a guardian angel named Clarence Oddbody. And Clarence jumps over the bridge before George and forces George to rescue him.
I didn't have time to get some stylish underwear. Wife gave me this on my last birthday. I passed away in it. Oh, Tom Sawyer's drying out too. You should read the new book Mark Twain's writing now.
How did you happen to fall in?
I didn't fall in. I jumped in to save George.
You what? To save me?
Well, I did, didn't I? You didn't go through with it, did you?
Go through with what?
Suicide.
Oh, it's against the law to commit suicide around here.
Yeah, it's against the law where I come from, too.
Where do you come from?
Heaven.
The truth is, George was not alone. He thought he was alone, but George was not alone. The holidays are a very hard time for many people. There are many people in our world that need guardian angels. They may not be of the celestial sort that Clarence is. Actually, they may look a lot like you and me. We may be called to be a voice that says, hang on, there is more. You are not alone. I am here with you. We may need to be an angel. And this week I've been talking with many people about their thoughts and their stories about angels. And many of you feel a very strong sense about the presence of angels, both celestial and human. And for some of it is a loved one that has passed away, reminders. For me, it's always been a butterfly. When I see a butterfly, I'm reminded of my mother. But for other people, it's a feather or a stone, just a reminder that their presence of their loved one is still with them. And others have spoke of experiences where when someone or something physically intervened to keep them or a loved one safe. Several years ago, I heard the story of a member from one of my previous churches. She said that she had her first angel experience when she was a young teen in the early 1970s. She said children were playing on the grass after church, and one young boy accidentally ran off the corner. And the way that the corner was, it was the highest part of this wall. You literally could just run off and fall. It had to be about 6 feet, 6 or 7 feet. And so this boy was running, and he just ran off the corner. And everyone heard the screams and the crying, and the ambulance squad was called. And it was later that an older woman, a member of the church, told her story. She said she was sitting in a parked car on the street facing that corner. And she saw the boy run off the edge of the wall. And she watched as he miraculously, these are her words, miraculously floated down to the ground as if someone held him in an invisible hand. Yes, he was shaken and scared, but when they got to the hospital, there were no injuries. The memory has stayed with me, she said, and I have told this story many times. Yes, I believe in angels. And in our church council meeting this past week, we shared some of our angel stories. I didn't ask her permission, but I'm going to look at her right now. Can I share your story, Gerda? Gerda talked about how this past week she was having lunch in a restaurant. And she had connected with several of the people there and told her story with them. And just as she was about to leave, this gentleman came over. He thanked her for all the work that she does in serving and caring for other people. He took the check and he says, "It's on me." And for that day, he was her angel. For me, it was, planning in my heart to take the step into seminary, but I had told very few people about it because I wasn't quite sure if God was calling me. And I had been at church that night, and this gentleman that I'd never met came up to me and started to talk to me, and he said, "I just want you to know that God's going to walk with you through this. Like, whatever call you've got, trust in it. And I'm like, "Who is this man? I don't know who this man is. I didn't know where he came from." I found out later he was the father of one of my friends. So I figured, oh, she must have said something. But I hadn't said anything to her. So I went up and I said, "What did you tell your father about me?" And she said, "I've never spoken about you to my father." And I realized in that moment, that was God's affirmation that the path I was about to take, he would walk with me through. So there are these moments, these angels that appear to us. Believe it or not, I did talk to the kids about this. There are the angels in the Bible look less like the angel that I handed the kids and more like Clarence. Maybe not exactly like Clarence, but something similar. The angels, they were messengers. Angel Gabriel was a messenger. Gabriel came with a message. He said, "God is coming and God is going to come to earth and you're going to be his parents." That's like a huge message. You don't need wings for that. You are going to carry God in your womb. That statement enough is big enough. The message is earth-shattering. Our message from the Hebrews today also cautions us. It says, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it." You see, the angels are all around us. We don't always keep our eyes open to it, though. Which further confirms the angels, brothers and sisters, are in our midst. Now, it may not have been a message that the Messiah was coming, but Clarence had a pretty powerful message for George Bailey. His message for George was, "George, you matter. Your life matters. Your life has purpose. But George couldn't see it. And so George wishes that he had never been born before. He wishes that he had never lived on that earth. And he's given a chance to see what the world would look like without him. But you see, without George, there is no Bedford Falls. It becomes Pottersville. And without George, there is no Bailey Building and Loan. There is no Bailey Park with affordable housing for people. Without George, his brother Harry never survived a sledding accident. Without George, Mr. Gower, the pharmacist, poisoned that young boy and he went to jail. Without George, both Mary and his mother are left alone without a family. And so George begins to see the deep impact that his life had on those around him. And the truth is, brothers and sisters, each of our lives have an powerful impact on others in both small and large ways. We impact our world. We impact God's plan, not only for our lives, but for our families' lives, but for also for people in situations that we will never see and never know. Our lives touch the lives of others. Each one of us plays a role in God's plan. The people that whose lives you touch, the things that you do make a difference in the world around. As long as you have breath, you have some part in God's plan. And the absence of you leaves a hole. The absence of your life leaves a big hole that you and I cannot even begin to comprehend. Clarence reminds George at one point, he says, each man and woman live touches so many others. George is given this chance to go back and see what the world would look like. And what he finds as he looks back is a house full of angels from his community.
Glory to the newborn King, peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sin was reconciled. Joyful all ye nations rise, joy the triumph of the skies, with angelic hosts proclaim, Christ is born in Bethlehem.
The fool flew all the way up here in a blizzard.
Harry, how about your banquet in New York?
Oh, I left right in the middle of it, as soon as I got Mary's telegram. Good idea, Ernie, a toast. To my big brother, George, the richest man in town.
So when George decides to go back to his life, when he decides that, yes, he understands just how much his life impacted the world around him, he goes back and he finds a community that has come together to raise the 8,000 plus, because he was not alone. Not only did he have Clarence walking with him, but he had brothers and sisters, people whose lives he had touched, that as soon as they knew he was in need, they were there to walk alongside him. You see, George really was the richest man in town. Sisters and brothers, my prayer for you, my prayer that I leave for you in this message that I hope you hear, is that your life matters. Your life matters. Even when you feel like you are alone, there are angels in your midst. God is reaching down to remind us over and over again that we are not alone. There will be times also when we are called to be the voice of the angel, when we are called to share a message that tells our brothers and sisters, you are not alone. God is with you. We are here. You see, the greatest joy we have is not in the possessions that we accumulate. Christmas is not about the possessions that we get. Our joy is found in our family and our friends that walk alongside us, no matter what we are walking through. And our greatest joy is that we have a God that loved us so much that he chose to come down and dwell among us, to come into the messiness of our world, to come down and be with us, not just 2,000 years ago, but each day. Today, God's presence is very real in messengers, angels in our midst. And that last line, I didn't give you the last line. Maybe if you've seen the movie, perhaps you know the last line. We got it? The last line, every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. We have a bell? There we go. There we go. Well, if that's true, we've had a lot of bell ringing today, right? The bells have been ringing several times in worship. We know that there are, in fact, angels in our midst, right here, right now. God is present, and we, brothers and sisters, are not alone. There is joy in that message. Amen.
Amen.